Welcome to Chilling with Teddy G, an authentic black channel empowering the black community and capturing the modern day black reality through investigative journalism. I'm your host, Teddy G. Hello to all of my melanated kings and queens, my brothers and sisters in Africa, as well as South Africa, and to my listening audience around the globe. I welcome each and every one of you back to another episode of CWTG, where you know we talk about anything and everything with absolutely no sugar, no frosting, and definitely no mayonnaise. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this is part two to a story that we already did about former President Agent Orange's knowledge of the January Sixers' attentions and this damaging testimony that we are receiving from former Mark Meadows' aide, who testifies to the House about exactly what everyone was aware of, which I mean her boss, Mark Meadows, the former president, Agent Orange, and how the January Sixers activities could have been prevented if they were taken more seriously by everyone that was on there. Also about President's Agent Orange's feelings on what the January Sixers were going to do, his feeling toward Mike Pence, his vice president, and how he had no guts and didn't stand by his side because he believed that this was a fraudulent election. We're going to get right into where we left off at, ladies and gentlemen, as soon as we do some housekeeping, because we got to keep the dirty laundry clean with the Copyright Disclaimer Act of 1976 under Title 17, Section 107. Allowances is made for the fair use for the purpose such as criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching, scholarships, and research. Fair use is permitted by the copyright statute that may otherwise be infringing non-profit, educational, or personal use, tips the balance in the favor of fair use. So yeah, ladies and gentlemen, let's get right on to where we left off with on the previous episode.
And we just heard the president say that he would be with his supporters as they marched to the Capitol, even though he did not end up going. He certainly wanted to. Some have questioned whether President Trump genuinely planned to come here to the Capitol on January 6th. In his book, Mark Meadows falsely wrote that after President Trump gave his speech on January 6th, he told Mr. Meadows that he was, quote, speaking metaphorically about the walk to the Capitol. As you will see, Donald Trump was not speaking metaphorically. As we heard earlier, Rudy Giuliani told Ms. Hutchinson that Mr. Trump planned to travel to the Capitol on January 6th. I want to pause for just a moment to ask you, Ms. Hutchinson, to explain some of the terminology you will hear today. We've heard you use two different terms to describe plans for the president's movement to the Capitol or anywhere else. One of those is a scheduled movement, and another one is OTR. Could you describe for us what each of those mean?
And before we let her describe that, ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing from the vice chair, Ms. Cheney, who was just giving that testimony and asking Mrs. Hutchinson to explain what those two terms means.
A scheduled presidential movement is on his official schedule. It's notified to the press and to a wide range of staff that will be traveling with him. It's known to the public, known to the Secret Service, and they're able to coordinate the movement days in advance. An off-the-record movement is confined to the knowledge of a very, very small group of advisors and staff. Typically, a very small group of staff would travel with him, mostly that are just included in the national security package. You can pull an off-the-record movement together in less than an hour. It's a way to kind of circumvent having to release it to the press, if that's the goal of it, or to not have to have as many security parameters put in place ahead of time to make the movement happen.
Thank you. And let's turn back now to the president's plans to travel to the Capitol on January 6th. We know that White House counsel Pat Cipollone was concerned about the legal implications of such a trip, and he agreed with the Secret Service that it shouldn't happen. Ms. Hutchinson, did you have any conversations with Pat Cipollone about his concerns about the president going to the Capitol on January 6th?
On January 3rd, Mr. Cipollone had approached me knowing that Mark had raised the prospect of going up to the Capitol on January 6th. Mr. Cipollone and I had a brief private conversation where he said to me, we need to make sure that this doesn't happen. This would be legally a terrible idea for us. We have serious legal concerns if we go up to the Capitol that day. And he then urged me to continue relaying that to Mr. Meadows, because it's my understanding that Mr. Cipollone thought that Mr. Meadows was indeed pushing this along with the president.
And we understand, Ms. Hutchinson, that you also spoke to Mr. Cipollone on the morning of the 6th as you were about to go to the rally on the Ellipse. And Mr. Cipollone said something to you like, make sure the movement to the Capitol does not happen. Is that correct?
That's correct. I saw Mr. Cipollone right before I walked out onto West Exec that morning. And Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. Keep in touch with me. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we make that movement happen.
And do you remember which crimes Mr. Cipollone was concerned with?
In the days leading up to the 6th, we had conversations about potentially obstructing justice or defrauding the electoral count.
Let's hear about some of those concerns that you mentioned earlier in one of your interviews with us.
Having a private conversation with Pat late in the afternoon of the 3rd or the 4th, that Pat was concerned it would look like we were obstructing justice or obstructing the Electoral College count. And I apologize for probably not being very firm with my legal terms here, but that it would look like we were obstructing what was happening on Capitol Hill. And he was also worried that it would look like we were inciting a riot or encouraging a riot to erupt on the Capitol, at the Capitol.
Look like, or potentially could have, in my eyesight, ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what happened. Let me repeat that. In my eyesight, that's exactly what happened. Okay? Because even though this was prior to the riots still happened. The invasion of the Capitol still happened. People died in this incident because you guys were aware of what was going on and you didn't want it to look like you had any involvement in that. Which could have been the case, or maybe probably was the case when it comes to you two. But when you come to a former President Agent Orange and the people that was closest to him, as you said in your own testimony, this they were possibly encouraging this. Okay, even your boss, Mark Meadows, who was definitely on Agent Orange's side when it came to supporting him for these false beliefs that he had about this Electoral College vote and what Mike Pence was doing, or rather what the president didn't want him to do in this Electoral College finalizing the presidency of Jim Crow Joe, as far as I'm concerned. Let's continue.
In fact, in the days before January 6th and on January 6th itself, President Trump expressed to multiple White House aides that he wanted to go to the Capitol after his speech. Here's what various White House aides have told the committee about the president's desire to go to the Capitol.
Did the president tell you this, that he wanted to speak at the Capitol?
Correct, yes.
During the meeting in the dining room, did the idea of the president proceeding or walking to the Capitol on the 6th after his speech come up? Walking to the Capitol? No. Driving to the Capitol? It came up. Okay, how did it come up and what was discussed?
You brought it up. You said, I want to go down to the Capitol.
What about him marching to the Capitol on the 6th?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So, just kind of a general thing, I mean, to get into the specifics of it, I was aware of the desire of the president to potentially march to the or accompany the rally attendees to the Capitol.
When did you first hear about this idea of the president accompanying rally attendees to the Capitol on the 6th?
Well, this was at the 6th. This was during the after he finished his remarks.
When the president...
Before we go on, I want y'all to understand that that was the former assistant to the president, okay? So he's in the Beast, or whatever you want to call this vehicle that he rides around in, is where this conversation was taking place, okay? So not only were they well aware of it, but the president was encouraging it.
It said that he would be going to the Capitol during his speech on the Ellipse. The Secret Service scrambled to find a way for him to go. We know this from witnesses and the Secret Service, also from messages among staff on the President's National Security Council. The NSC staff were monitoring the situation in real time, and you can see how the situation evolved in the following chat log that the committee has obtained.
Okay, now even before that, ladies and gentlemen, I want y'all to understand this is the reason why melanated individuals, Native Black American people, knew that this was going to happen because of President Agent Orange's honesty about how he felt about certain groups, you know, ethnic people and different nationalities. Okay, so we were well aware that he was going to take this all the way and wanted to be there even though he was not there. Now, on the not getting off the subject, but I want you to understand this is how come we don't know the intentions of Jim Crow Joe, because he's in the closet, Donald Trump. He's not a spoken one, or I should say Agent Orange. Excuse me for using that profanity when it comes to naming that name. But anyway, let's get back to the current situation, ladies and gentlemen, where we're going to see exactly what the National Security Council chat log had to say about this. And then you'll have a full understanding.
You can see NSC staff believed that Mogul, the president, was, quote, going to the Capitol, and, quote, they are finding the best route now. From these chats, we also know the staff learned of the attack on the Capitol in real time. When President Trump left the Ellipse stage at 1:10, the staff knew that rioters had invaded the inaugural stage and Capitol Police were calling for all available officers to respond. When Republican leader Kevin McCarthy heard the president say he was going to the Capitol, he called you, Ms. Hutchinson. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
And in this text message, you told Tony Ornato, quote, McCarthy just called me too. And do you guys think you're coming to my office? Tell us about the call that day with Leader McCarthy during the president's speech on the Ellipse.
I was still in the tent behind the stage, and when you're behind the stage, you can't really hear what's going on in front of you. So when Mr. McCarthy called me with this information, I answered the call, and he sounded rushed, but also frustrated and angry at me. And I was confused because I didn't know what the president had just said. He then explained, the president just said he's marching to the Capitol. You told me this whole week you aren't coming up here. Why would you lie to me? I said, I'm not lying. I wasn't lying to you, sir. We're not going to the Capitol. And he said, well, he just said it on stage, Cassidy. Figure it out. Don't come up here. I said, I'll run the traps on this and I'll shoot you a text. I can assure you we're not coming up to the Capitol. We've already made that decision. He pressed a little bit more, believing me, but I think frustrated that the president had said that. And we ended the phone conversation after that. I called Mr. Renato to reconfirm that we weren't going to the Capitol, and which is also in our text messages. I sent Mr. McCarthy another text telling him the affirmative that we were not going up to the Capitol, and he didn't respond after that.
And we understand, Ms. Hutchinson, that the plans for the president to come up to the Capitol had included discussions at some point about what the president would do when he came up to the Capitol on January 6th. Let's look at a clip of one of your interviews discussing that issue with the committee.
When you were talking about a scheduled movement, did anyone say what the president wanted to do when he got here?
No. Not that I can specifically remember. I remember hearing a few different ideas discussed with Mark and Scott Perry, Mark and Rudy Giuliani. I don't know which conversations were elevated to the president. I don't know what he personally wanted to do when he went up to the Capitol that day.
Oh, yes, we do. The American public knows exactly what he wanted to do, even though you didn't. Even though maybe his staff didn't, which I don't believe that either. But trust me, we knew exactly what he wanted to do at the Capitol. That's why he was so eager and so persistent to get there. And when I say persistent, ladies and gentlemen, I really do mean he was very persistent. You're going to be surprised on how persistent that he was to attend that Capitol riot. Believe me when I tell you that.
There were discussions about him having another speech outside of the Capitol before going in. I know that there was a conversation about him going into the House chamber at one point.
You heard that, ladies and gentlemen. He had every intention on not only giving a speech outside the Capitol, but going into the chambers to do what? Interrupt what was going on? Curious minds want to know.
As we've all just heard, in the days leading up to January 6th, on the day of the speech, both before and during and after the rally speech, President Trump was pushing his staff to arrange for him to come up here to the Capitol during the electoral vote count. Let's turn now to what happened in the president's vehicle when the Secret Service told him he would not be going to the Capitol after his speech. First, here is the president's motorcade leaving the Ellipse after his speech on January 6th.
Showing the motorcade pulling off from the Ellipse.
When you returned to the White House in the motorcade after the president's speech, where did you go?
When I returned to the White House, I walked upstairs towards the chief of staff's office, and I noticed Mr. Renato lingering outside of the office. Once we had made eye contact, he quickly waved me to go into his office, which was just across the hall from mine. When I went in, he shut the door, and I noticed Bobby Engel, who is the head of Mr. Trump's security detail, sitting in a chair, just looking somewhat discombobulated and a little lost. I looked at Tony, and he had said, "Did you effing hear what happened in the Beast?" I said, "No, Tony, I just got back. What happened?" Tony proceeded to tell me that when the president got in the Beast, he was under the impression from Mr. Meadows that the off-the-record movement to the Capitol was still possible and likely to happen, but that Bobby had more information. So once the president had gotten into the vehicle with Bobby, he thought that they were going up to the Capitol, and when Bobby had relayed to him, "We're not, we don't have the assets to do it, it's not secure, we're going back to the West Wing," the president had very strong, a very angry response to that. Tony described him as being irate. The president said something to the effect of, "I'm the effing president, take me up to the Capitol now." To which Bobby responded, "Sir, we have to go back to the West Wing." The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, "Sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol." Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
Motion toward his clavicles. So are we under the impression that you want to choke this guy? And you're grabbing the steering wheel? We're talking about the presidents of the divided snakes of America acting like a little child or a gang member. Do what I told you to do. I'm the effing president of the divided snakes of America. And when I say we going somewhere, we going somewhere. Let's hear that testimony again.
The president had very strong, a very angry response to that. Tony described him as being irate. The president said something to the effect of, "I'm the effing president, take me up to the Capitol now." To which Bobby responded, "Sir, we have to go back to the West Wing." The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, "Sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol." Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
And was Mr. Engel in the room as Mr. Renato told you this story?
He was.
Did Mr. Engel correct or disagree with any part of the story from Mr. Renato?
Mr. Engel did not correct or disagree with any part of the story.
Did Mr. Engel or Mr. Renato ever after that tell you that what Mr. Renato had just said was untrue?
Neither Mr. Renato nor Mr. Engel told me ever that it was untrue.
And despite this altercation, this physical altercation, during the ride back to the White House, President Trump still demanded to go to the Capitol. Here's what Kayleigh McEnany, the White House press secretary at the time, wrote in her personal notes and told the committee about President Trump's desire to go to the Capitol after returning to the White House.
"When you wrote, 'POTUS wanted to walk to the Capitol,' was that based solely on what the president said during his speech or anything that he or anybody else said afterwards?"
"So to the best of my recollection, I believe when we got back to the White House, he said he wanted to physically walk with the marchers. And according to my notes, he then said he'd be fine with just writing the piece. But to the best of my recollection, he wanted to be a part of the march in some fashion."
"Okay, and just for the record, the piece refers to the presidential limousine?"
"Yes."
President Trump did not go to the Capitol that day. We understand that he blamed Mark Meadows for that.
"So prior to leaving the rally site, when he got off the stage and everybody was making the movement back to the motorcade, I had overheard Mr. Meadows say to him then, as I had prior to Mr. Trump taking the stage that morning, that he was still working on getting an off-the-record movement to the Capitol. So when Mr. Trump took the stage, he was under the impression by Mr. Meadows that it was still possible. So when he got off the stage, I had relayed to Mr. Meadows that I had another conversation with Tony. The movement was still not possible. Mr. Meadows said, okay. And then as they proceeded to go to the motorcade, and Mr. Meadows had reiterated, we're going to work on it. So I talked to Bobby. Bobby has more information. Mark got into his vehicle. To my understanding, Trump got into the Beast. And after we all arrived back at the White House, later in the day, it had been relayed to me via Mark that the president wasn't happy that Bobby didn't pull it off for him and that Mark didn't work hard enough to get the movement on the books.
Okay then, ladies and gentlemen, do y'all understand what that means? That means if it had been totally and solely left up to Agent Orange, he would have been at that insurrection. That's what that means. I need y'all to understand the significance of that. Even though they're putting it the way they're putting it, you need to understand that they're directly telling you that if it had been the president's sole decision, that he would have been there. Okay? And witness what happened. I know some of y'all out there going and maybe participated. I ain't gonna go that far. Maybe, maybe not. We'll never know because he didn't get there. But we know for sure from the testimonies that we've heard today that he wanted to be there. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And the only reason why he wasn't there because of his chief Secret Service agent who did not allow that to happen. Plain and simple.
The physical altercation that Ms. Hutchinson described in the presidential vehicle was not the first time that the president had become very angry about issues relating to the election. On December 1, 2020, Attorney General Barr said in an interview that the Department of Justice had not found evidence of widespread election fraud sufficient to change the outcome of the election.
Of course not, because there wasn't any. This was all fabricated, and guess by who? You got it.
Ms. Hutchinson, how did the president react to hearing that news?
Around the time that I understand the AP article went live, I remember hearing noise coming from down the hallway, so I poked my head out of the office, and I saw the valet walking towards our office. He had said, get the chief down to the dining room, the president wants him. So Mark went down to the dining room, came back to the office a few minutes later. After Mark had returned, I left the office and went down to the dining room, and I noticed that the door was propped open and the valet was inside the dining room changing the tablecloth off of the dining room table. He motioned for me to come in and then pointed towards the front of the room near the fireplace mantel and the TV, where I first noticed there was ketchup dripping down the wall and there's a shattered porcelain plate on the floor. The valet had articulated that the president was extremely angry at the Attorney General's AP interview and had thrown his lunch against the wall, which was causing them to have to clean up. So I grabbed a towel and started wiping the ketchup off the wall to help the valet out. And he said something to the effect of, he's really ticked off about this. I would stay clear of him for right now. He's really, really ticked off about this right now.
And Ms. Hutchinson, was this the only instance that you are aware of where the president threw dishes?
Nope.
It's not.
And are there other instances in the dining room that you recall where he expressed his anger?
Of course there was. Come on, you think that's the first time that he throwed a hissy fit and started throwing things around? I don't think so. His character says different.
There were several times throughout my tenure with the Chief of Staff that I was aware of him either throwing dishes or flipping the tablecloth to let all the contents of the table go onto the floor and likely break or go everywhere.
And Ms. Hutchinson, Attorney General Barr described to the committee the president's angry reaction when he finally met with President Trump. Let's listen.
And I said, look, I know that you're dissatisfied with me, and I'm glad to offer my resignation. And he pounded the table very hard. Everyone sort of jumped, and he said, accept it.
Mr. Chairman, I reserve.
Gentlewoman reserves. The chair requests those in the hearing room to remain seated until the Capitol Police have escorted our witness from the room. Pursuant to the order of the committee of today, the chair declares the committee in recess for a period of approximately 10 minutes.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, now we know how serious this is. They say that she's putting her life on the line in order to give this testimony, which I don't doubt. But on the other hand, any black Native American or melanated individual got that same terror and need that same type of security just to walk out the front door on an everyday basis. You know, so I hear what they're saying, but I'm not impressed, because believe me when I tell you that through these law enforcement race soldiers, this happens every day for a melanated individual. Every single day. Yes, that's right. I got to put that point out there. Even though it doesn't hold a lot of relevance to today's episode. But yet, it does. With that, we'll be right back after this short break. Okay, let's go back in the chamber as the committee, as well as the witness, Kathy Hutchison, are entering back into chambers to continue this committee hearing.
Particularly damning testimony today, given her loyalty.
Committee will be in order.
They've gaveled back in.
Chair recognizes a gentlewoman from Wyoming, Vice Chair Cheney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we turn to what Ms. Hutchison saw and heard in the White House during the violent attack on the Capitol on January 6th, let's discuss certain communications White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows had on January 5th. President Trump's associate Roger Stone attended rallies during the afternoon and the evening of January 5th in Washington, D.C. On January 5th and 6th, Mr. Stone was photographed with multiple members of the Oath Keepers, who were allegedly serving as his security detail. As we now know, multiple members of that organization have been charged with or pled guilty to crimes associated with January 6th. Mr. Stone has invoked his Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination before this committee. General Michael Flynn has also taken the Fifth before this committee. Mr. Stone previously had been convicted of other federal crimes unrelated to January 6th. General Flynn had pleaded guilty to a felony charge also predating and unrelated to January 6th. President Trump pardoned General Flynn just weeks after the presidential election. And in July of 2020, he commuted the sentence Roger Stone was to serve. The night before January 6th, President Trump instructed his Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, to contact both Roger Stone and Michael Flynn regarding what would play out the next day. Ms. Hutchison, is it your understanding that President Trump asked Mark Meadows to speak with Roger Stone and General Flynn on January 5th?
That's correct. That is my understanding.
And Ms. Hutchison, is it your understanding that Mr. Meadows called Mr. Stone on the 5th?
I'm under the impression that Mr. Meadows did complete both a call to Mr. Stone and General Flynn the evening of the 5th.
And do you know what they talked about that evening, Ms. Hutchison?
I'm not sure.
Is it your understanding that Mr. Giuliani, Mr. Eastman, and others had set up what has been called, quote, a war room at the Willard Hotel on the night of the 5th?
I was aware of that the night of the 5th.
And do you know if Mr. Meadows ever intended to go to the Willard Hotel on the night of the 5th?
Mr. Meadows had a conversation with me where he wanted me to work with Secret Service on a movement from the White House to the Willard Hotel so he could attend the meeting or meetings with Mr. Giuliani and his associates in the war room.
And what was your view as to whether or not Mr. Meadows should go to the Willard that night?
I had made it clear to Mr. Meadows that I didn't believe it was a smart idea for him to go to the Willard Hotel that night. I wasn't sure everything that was going on at the Willard Hotel, although I knew enough about what Mr. Giuliani and his associates were pushing during this period. I didn't think that it was something appropriate for the White House Chief of Staff to attend or to consider involvement in. I made that clear to Mr. Meadows. Throughout the afternoon, he mentioned a few more times going up to the Willard Hotel that evening and then eventually dropped the subject the night of the 5th and said that he would dial in instead.
So General Flynn has appeared before this committee, and when he appeared before our committee, he took the 5th. Let's briefly view a clip of General Mike Flynn taking the 5th Amendment. General Flynn, do you believe the violence on January 6th was justified?
Fire with that. Congressman Cheney, could you repeat the question, please?
Yes. General Flynn, do you believe the violence on January 6th was justified?
Can I get clarification? Is that a moral question or are you asking a legal question?
I'm asking both. Do you believe the violence on January 6th was justified morally?
Take the fifth.
Do you believe the violence on January 6th was justified legally?
Fifth.
General Flynn, do you believe in the peaceful transition of power in the United States of America?
The fifth.
Let's move on now to January 6th and the conduct of Donald Trump and Mark Meadows during the attack on the Capitol. Ms. Hutchinson, I'd like now for us to listen to a description, your description of what transpired in the West Wing during the attack. For context, in this clip, you described the time frame starting at about 2 p.m.
So I remember Mark being alone in his office for quite some time, and you know, I know we've spoken about Ben Williamson going in at one point, and I don't personally remember Ben going in. I don't doubt that he had gone in, but I remember him being alone in his office for most of the afternoon, around 2 o'clock to 2:05. You know, we were watching the TV, and I could see that the rioters were getting closer and closer to the Capitol. Mark still hadn't popped out of his office or said anything about it. So that's when I went into his office. I saw that he was sitting on his couch, on his cell phone. Same as the morning where he was just kind of scrolling and typing. I said, "Hey, are you watching the TV, Chief?" Because his TV was small and you can see it, but I didn't know if he was really paying attention. I said, "Are you watching the TV, Chief?" And he's like, "Yeah." The rioters are getting really close. Have you talked to the president? He said, no, he wants to be alone right now. Still looking at his phone. So I started to get frustrated because, you know, I sort of felt like I was watching this is not a great comparison, but a bad car accident that was about to happen where you can't stop it, but you want to be able to do something. And I remember thinking in that moment, Mark needs to snap out of this, and I don't know how to snap him out of this, but he needs to care. And I just remember I blurted out, I said, "Mark, do you know where Jim's at right now?" And he looked up at me at that point and said, "Jim?" I said, "Mark, he was on the floor a little while ago giving a floor speech. Did you listen?" He said, "Yeah, it was real good. Did you like it?" And I said, "Yeah. Do you know where he's at right now?" He said, "No, I haven't heard from him." I said, "You might want to check in with him, Mark." And I remember pointing at the TV and I said, "The rioters are getting close. They might get in." And he looked at me and said, something to the effect of, all right, I'll give him a call.
Not long after the rioters broke into the Capitol, you described what happened with White House counsel Pat Cipollone.
No more than a minute and a half later, I see Pat Cipollone barreling down the hallway towards our office and rushed right in, looked at me, said, "Is Mark in his office?" And I said, "Yes." He just looked at me and started shaking his head and went over, opened Mark's office door, stood there with the door propped open, and said something to the, Mark's still sitting on his phone. I remember like glancing and he's still sitting on his phone. And I remember Pat saying to him something to the effect of, "The rioters have gotten to the Capitol, Mark. We need to go down and see the president now." And Mark looked up at him and said, "He doesn't want to do anything, Pat." And Pat said something to the effect of, and very clearly had said this to Mark, something to the effect of, "Mark, something needs to be done or people are going to die and the blood's going to be on your effing hands. This is getting out of control. I'm going down there." And at that point, Mark stood up from his couch, both of his phones in his hand, he had his glasses on still. He walked out with Pat. He put both of his phones on my desk and said, "Let me know if Jim calls." And they walked out, went down to the dining room.
A few minutes later, Representative Jordan called back.
A couple minutes later, so likely around between 2:15 and 2:25. I know the tweet went out at 2:24. I don't remember if I was there when the tweet went out or if it happened right afterwards, but Jim had called. I answered the phone, said, "One second." He knew it was, I guess he knew it was, and I introduced myself, but I don't remember if he called my cell phone or if he had called one of Mark's. But I answered the phone and said, "One sec, Mark's on the hall. I'm gonna go hand the phone to him." He said, "Okay." So I went down, I asked the valet if Mark was in the dining room. The valet said yes. I opened the door to the dining room, briefly stepped in to get Mark's attention, showed him the phone, like flipped the phone his way so he could see it said Jim Jordan. He had stepped to where I was standing there holding the door open, took the phone, talking to Jim with the door still propped open. So I took a few steps back. So I probably was 2 feet from Mark. He was standing in the doorway going to the Oval Office dining room. They had a brief conversation, and in the crossfires, you know, I heard briefly like what they were talking about, but in the background, I had heard conversations in the Oval dining room at that point talking about the Hang Mike Pence chance.
Okay, let's pause that right there, ladies and gentlemen, because we're well into over 40 minutes of this, so we'll have to have a part three. But did you hear those last words that Mrs. Hutchinson said about hanging Mark Pence? Now, I want y'all to understand that this conversation is happening inside the White House at the Oval dining room. Okay, and we're going to get back into this part three, ladies and gentlemen. I had no idea it was going to take this long. But we have a huge and broad picture of exactly what the White House administration, the Secret Service, and all of the individuals that were supporting Agent Orange and his belief into this fraudulent election. So now we're getting down to the point where we're talking about what hanging the Vice President of the United States because he wasn't on Agent Orange's side. We're going to get into that into a part three of this. Thank y'all so much for tuning in to another episode of Chilling with Teddy G. I'm going to start directly on this current testimony on the part three. So these episodes will be running back to back. You won't find any other episodes in between these. I have to bring y'all these stories and give you this pertinent information, guys, because I love you. Loving you guys is my food. Teddy G is hungry each and every single day of his life. And until I have the opportunity to address you guys again, I bid each and every one of you peace, love, and soul.